Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's Job Seeker Call. Our topic today is how do you ace behavioral interviewing questions? Many hiring authorities are now asking behavioral interviewing questions to get an idea of how you react to certain situations. These are often more difficult to answer than your typical interviewing questions. During our program today, we're going to address the following. What are the most common behavioral questions asked? How do you answer them better than your competition? And why should you welcome this type of questioning? I know normally when somebody finds out there's going to be behavioral interviewing questions, it scares them rather than them having realized that this is actually gives you a better opportunity to get that job. So let's start out with what are the most common behavioral questions asked. In a traditional job interview, an employer might ask questions like, tell me about yourself. Why are you interested in our opportunity? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What behavioral interviewing does is it requires you to provide a concrete example of when you demonstrated a particular skill that is actually needed for their job. Instead of asking you for your strengths, they might ask you, our job requires the ability to work well under pressure and make quick decisions. Can you give me an example from your past when you had to make a decision quick under pressure? The question also would not stop there. In behavioral interviewing, what the employer does is ask you an initial question like that, and then they follow up on your answer with probing questions to obtain more details from you. They would be interested in the results or the impact of the decision you made. Behavioral interviewing questions provide two benefits to the hiring authority, and when you're aware of these benefits, then you'll know where to place your efforts. Number one, it gives the employer insight about your personality and your character, your core values. And number two, it screens out people who are not telling the truth. Because if you fabricated an answer, the probing questions that they follow up with your answer on will trip you up as well. And so often, you know, they find out that if they just ask routine traditional job interviewing questions, they're not able to determine if a person is actually telling them the truth or if the person has the traits that are going to be needed for their particular job. Let's talk about additional common behavioral interviewing questions. You know, what do you do when priorities change quickly? If they're giving this question, they want you to give an example of when that happened and how did you react. Describe a project that was implemented because of your efforts. Describe your role and what was the impact. Again, they're looking for very specific examples based on the job that they have available. And when people are very good at behavioral interviews, they really do know if, in fact, you're going to be able to perform most of the tasks involved in this job. Another example is describe the most difficult decision you made at work and what happened. Number four, provide an example of an important goal that you set and describe your process in attaining it. So again, they're not only asking you what goal did you set, they want an example of a specific goal, and they want to know what goals you feel are important. So see, they put the word important in here because, again, if you talk about something that was not that important, they're going to wonder if that's the most, you know, critical goal you've ever set. And when they want you to describe your process in attaining it, they want to know that when you set goals, you do attain them, that they're non-negotiable. Number five, tell us about a time when you built rapport quickly with someone under difficult conditions. And normally when they're asking you these questions, these are the types of things that you're going to face in their job opportunity, and that's why they're asking you to give these specific examples. Number six can be describe the most difficult person you've ever had to work with and how you manage the working relationship. I don't know a job or a working environment where there's not somebody that can be difficult to deal with. You know, and part of any job is the ability to work with difficult people. And then how do you still get your job done? How do you still manage a working relationship when you're dealing with a difficult person? And sometimes that difficult person could be a supervisor. It could be a coworker. It could be someone that you have no control over. Number seven is give an example where you have shown your creativity. Most employers love to know that you come to the job with ideas, that you're not only going to do things the way that they've always done things, that you're the type of person that's going to look for a more creative way or a better way of getting things done. Number eight, we are a very proactive company versus reactive. Can you give me examples of where you've proven your ability to position yourself proactively? This is one concern I hear often from hiring authorities is that most people are reactive. It's like you're always putting out fires. You're always solving issues rather than anticipating them. And again, it would be very good for you to review these questions, since these are the most common behavioral interviewing questions that are asked, and really formulate your answers so that if you are faced with these, you've got really good examples, you know, of where, in fact, you positioned yourself to be proactive versus reactive. Number 9, describe an incident where you were confronted by dishonesty in the workplace and how did you handle it? Number 10, describe the most challenging negotiating you've ever been involved in, and who was involved and what were the results. And I think it's important here to realize that in negotiating, you don't always win. You know, in negotiating, you have to, you know, both parties have to feel like, you know, they won something. You know, so don't give an example where you won and the other person really lost, because then they might worry that you don't see the importance in having the other person feel like they at least had some wins in the negotiating process. And last, tell me about the most effective presentation you've made. Who was your target? What was your topic? And what were the results? Now, when they're asking you about an effective presentation, they're not assuming for a moment that you're giving the type of presentation a professional speaker would give or somebody that's in front of a large audience. But in any job, you're going to have to give presentations. It could be an idea that you have. It could be a project that you've been assigned. You know, so who are you interacting with when you're trying to sell an idea or make a presentation? You know, what were you talking to them about and what were the results? Obviously, you want to give an example of a place where you had positive results. So you want to describe a situation where you were trying to get something done. You had to present your idea or you had to present the facts. You're going to let them know who you presented this to, and then, you know, what was the topic, and then how did you get the results that you were hoping for. Now, let's go into the second topic. How do you answer questions, these behavioral interviewing questions, better than your competition? I have to tell you that up front, most job seekers are not prepared for behavioral interviewing questions. You're used to being asked, tell me about yourself, give me your strengths and weaknesses. And so right up front, the fact that you're in this program this week and you're listening to me, you're going to answer the questions better because you're going to prepare yourself. And now you're going to realize, and most interviews are using a combination of both. They're giving you some of the traditional interviewing questions and some behavioral interviewing questions. But I have to tell you something, that when they're giving you behavioral interviewing questions, they're showing interest in you. Because if they're doing a courtesy interview, they're going to ask you a couple of traditional questions and they're going to screen you out. And so, you know, the fact that you're even addressing this, you will answer the questions better than your competition. Most experts, you know, at behavioral interviewing suggest that you use the 3-step STAR process when answering behavioral interviewing questions. And this is something that would be good for you to learn. Step 1 is the situation or task that you're faced with. Step 2 is you describe the actions that you took. And step 3 is you give the results of your actions. So number 1, you want to just describe the task or the situation that you've been asked about, and then you're giving them specific actions that you took and what results you got. You don't want to give a long, drawn-out story. Nobody likes a long editorial, and you don't want to put, you know, all these other things that came into the situation. You want to talk about what was the task, what actions you took, and what were the results of your actions. Let me give you some additional tips, too, to answer questions better than your competition. Number 1, realize there is no right or wrong answer. Like, don't panic when you get a behavioral interviewing question, because they're asking you, you know, they're basically asking you, you know, a question that is going to reflect on something you've done in your past. Your answers are either going to prove you're a fit for the opportunity and the culture of this employer, or you're not. And the truth be known, if you're not a fit for their culture or their opportunity, it's better that you get screened out. Because if you got hired and you went to work there, it wouldn't fit. It wouldn't make you happy. You also want to be honest. Do not try to pretend you know answers, because the follow-up questions that they're going to ask are going to show that you have not told the truth. So don't try to shoot from the hip. Don't try to give answers and guess at the answers. If you don't know something, if they've asked you about a situation and you've never faced the situation, there's nothing wrong with you saying, I've never had that experience in my working life so far. You know, you don't want to make something up, because, again, in behavioral interviewing, they're asking you a question and then they're following up with, you know, small questions after that to make sure that they can clarify, you know, exactly how you handled the situation. You want to use all your life experiences as an example for your answer. So it doesn't have to be only work experience. Behavioral interviewing questions often require you, you know, to give examples so you can use your past work experience. Or if, say, that you're a job seeker that is younger, and you don't have much experience, you haven't had that many prior jobs, you know, then you have a problem here because you can't give job examples, okay? But to get around your lack of work experience, call on your life experience. You know, take examples from college or any volunteer organizations that you may have had, or maybe you work part-time, you know, so you may be able to answer part of the question, but not all of it because you don't have heavy experience. And I hear this from, you know, recent college grads. I hear this from people that are re-entering the workforce. You know, maybe you stayed at home and raised children for a while. You know, maybe you just haven't, you know, you've been out of work for a while and now they're asking you something that is something currently that would be going on in the workforce. There's nothing wrong with you saying, I don't have that experience. But let me tell you something else that I face that I think could relate to the type of, you know, skill sets you're looking for. So it doesn't have to be only work experience. It can be educational experience. It can be volunteer. It could be something personal that you dealt with. As long as you're not giving too much information, like if you're going to use personal things as an example, make sure that the personal examples you're giving are appropriate. You know, social media has really kind of torn down all the walls and all the filters that used to be there. And if you're being interviewed by a more mature person, they don't want to know, you know, personal things about you that they don't feel are appropriate. And think about this, they're considering you for a job. So if you do go back to your personal, you know, experience to give some examples because you don't have strong work experience or you don't have recent work experience, just make sure that the examples that you give would be considered appropriate by any age bracket. Now, why should you welcome this type of questioning? You know, because most people are like, oh my God, I'm going to have a behavioral interview. I'm scared to death. Let me give you, you know, some reasons why you should welcome this. When a hiring authority is asking you behavioral interviewing questions, they're trying to determine who would be the best fit for their company, their team, their job, and their company culture. And as a result, the person hired, okay, is a great match and usually does very well in a company environment. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I've talked to many job seekers where they interviewed and it sounded like a dream job. And then they started working and realizing they didn't fit in with the other people at the company. They didn't fit in with the company culture. You know, and all of a sudden, you know, the job was okay, but they don't feel a part of the team, and that never works out. And that's why, you know, if you're being asked behavioral interviewing questions, that means this company cares enough about you where they want to make sure that you're going to fit in with their company culture, their job, and their team. The behavioral interview process is also a two-way street. As you're being questioned, you're gaining valuable insight into what's most important to this employer. And this will help you determine if this is the type of environment and culture that you would find challenging or enjoyable. It was interesting. I talked to somebody earlier today, and he's been with the company for a number of years, and he's a vice president of sales for a very large company. And their company is being acquired, and they're being bought out by a company that has a very bad reputation. In fact, the company he's currently with has been named as one of the best companies to work for. And when you check this other company, they've been named as one of the worst places to work. And so he called me about changing jobs. And he said, you know, even before this all happens, you know, they said my job is not in danger, that they want to keep me, but it's not going to be a fit. I mean, they're all about the bottom line. They don't care about their people. They don't care about their clients. And I'm all about customer service. And I'm all about the people and the customers. So, you know, I need to look now before this even happens. And it, again, if you take a job, even if you've been unemployed for a while, and you take a job and you're all excited about it and you get there and you realize that this is not a fit for you, that every day is a major challenge, that these people have different values than you do, you know, you will never last at the job. You know, companies don't ask enough questions or reveal enough about themselves to ensure that the person they hire is a good fit when they don't ask behavioral interviewing questions. The behavioral interview reveals information that's going to help both the employer as well as you make the right career decision. They might decide that they're interested in you, but all of a sudden what they've revealed to you is not what you want. And so, again, when I say this is a two-way street, a behavioral interview helps the employer make a better choice and it helps you make a better decision if and when you get a job offer. And so what I would suggest to all of you on the phone, and we have a very large attendance today, and I'm glad to see that because you're seeing more and more companies are asking behavioral interviewing questions. So practice your answers to the most common questions and be prepared to give specific examples. You know, remember the model that we talked about. You know, that STAR process. You know, think about the situation or task that they're asking you about. That's step number one. And then give them facts, the actions you took, and then share your results. Because if you do that, often there's not even a lot of following up questions because you're giving them exactly what they need to know. They want to know, how did you deal with this? What actions did you take and what results did you get? Most job seekers dread this style of interview and therefore they freeze up. So if you embrace these questions and realize the advantage to you, and then you provide comprehensive answers, you're going to ace out your competition, and you are seeing more and more companies. Now, often a behavioral interview is not your screening interview. So if you go to a first interview and you're just being asked a list of questions and it's not a behavioral interview, don't assume for a second that that's going to be the style through the whole interviewing process. People that have a tendency of asking behavioral interviewing questions are highly skilled human resource people that understand that this is the best way, you know, to find out the most information about somebody and reveal the most information about your company to somebody. It's also the person that you're going to work for. You may have a traditional interview through the whole process, and then you get in front of the person you're going to work for, and they're asking you behavioral interviewing questions. So that's why you have to be great at both. I'm not saying only be good at behavioral interviewing. You've got to be great at both because you never know what you're going to be faced with when you go out there and you book interviews. And remember, your job as a job seeker is to book as many interviews as possible. You want to book regular interviews and you want to book informational interviews. Your job every day is, where can I, you know, schedule an interview today? And then once you get in front of these people, you want to be the person that really sounds the most competent. Because what employers are trying to determine during an interview, and this is so important for all of you to realize, when they're interviewing you, what they really want to know is, are you going to make me look good? Like, if I hire you, are you going to make me look good? Are you going to make my life easier because we've hired you? And so, you know, that's, the person is all about themselves when they're interviewing you. It's, are you going to make me look good? And they're going to hire the person that's going to make them look good. They're also going to hire somebody that they like. People do not hire individuals that they don't like. If you don't click in the interview with the interviewer, you're not going to get hired. And that's why so often, in addition to answering these questions, you want to let them know, you know, as you're giving them examples, that you got along with your coworkers, that you respect, you know, you respected the supervisors and managers that you worked for. You got to come across likable as you're answering these questions, because again, they want to hire somebody who's going to fit in with the team. You know, one person can't make a company, but one person can break a company. If they determine that you're negative in your answers, or you always see the glass half empty, you complain too much, you know, they're going to screen you out and you're not going to even know why. Even if you're the most qualified person, they still want to hire somebody who's going to compliment their current team. And I know one of the questions you're all going to have for me is, can you get a copy of this program and, you know, the recording of this call? Yes, every call that we do each week is recorded with the handouts. And so we post those in your career portal, usually within about 3 to 5 days after the call. We're trying to get them in quicker for you, but this call will be posted in the career portal. And we do that with all our calls. They're either in the 16-step process or some of them are in the library. So for those of you that have not been on these calls, you know, for a long period of time, all the calls we've done in the last 2 years are all stored in your career portal. So just log back in and look at that 16-step process and go to the library, and you've got a wealth of information that'll help you in your job. Okay, now I'm going to go to questions. You can ask me questions one of two ways. If you put a PIN number in when you called in, we gave you a telephone number, an access code, and a PIN number. If you put the PIN number in, you can go to the attendee list and find your name. If you are on a landline, not a cell phone, you can click that little yellow hand, and you and I can talk one-on-one. I'd be glad to role play with you. If you'd rather type in a question, you can go down to the bottom, and you see the word questions, click that plus sign. And then a dialogue box will open up. If you don't want me to use your first name, then just put anonymous, and I'll be, you know, I won't use your name at all when I'm answering your questions, and I will stay on the phone until I've answered all your questions. I think this is the most important part of this call. How can I help you find a job? Because our overall goal in providing this resource for you is to do anything and everything we can to help you find a job. All right, the first question is from John. What is the purpose of a courtesy interview? Why would a company waste their time when they know they're not going to hire you? It's interesting because, John, sometimes they don't look at the resume. They didn't look at the application. They depended on somebody else to book you in. And all of a sudden they realize, as they look at your paperwork, that you're not a fit for the job, or you've made a major mistake in very early in the interview. They had no intention of you know, conducting a courtesy interview, but you answered one of the first couple of questions wrong, or there's something about, you know, your appearance, the way you present yourself, your communication skills, there's something that has turned them off. So normally, John, people look at paperwork and they don't bring you in with the intention of conducting a courtesy interview, but something's happened very early in the process. Maybe you came dressed inappropriately. I've had a lot of employers that said if somebody answers, you know, yeah, rather than yes, and they do it more than once in an interview, they're screening them out. They're giving them a courtesy interview and they're getting them right out the door. So, you know, a lot of times they're not, their intention is not to do a courtesy interview, but something has happened where they end up conducting a courtesy interview. And you're right. It's just, it's a ridiculous waste of time for both you and them. Okay. I had a recent experience with a nonprofit animal welfare that I may want to call upon, but fear that someone hiring an engineer or project manager would consider it irrelevant. How much do I dare use that? This is from Jerry. I want to explain it. A recent experience with a nonprofit that I may want to call upon, but fear that someone hiring an engineer or project manager would consider irrelevant. How do I dare use that? You know what, Jerry? It's interesting. And I don't know if you watch, God, I've got to think of the name of the TV program, America's Got Talent. I know this is a really silly example to give you right now. But the act that won the $5 million and the Las Vegas show was a dog act. There were these two guys that had these trained dogs. And also Britain Has Talent. The act that won their prize was also a dog act. And they were saying how there are so many animal lovers. You know, I myself am one, you know. And anytime I've done an article where I've talked about my dog, I bring my dog to work with me every day, and people think that's really funny. I think that especially the type of nonprofit that you were, people like to know you did something. And the fact that you've got recent experience with a nonprofit animal welfare group, you know, yes, you know, you said you're an engineer or a project manager, and that people might consider that irrelevant. I don't believe that at all. I think that, you know, you filled some time, you did some work for a worthy cause, and chances are, Jerry, you're talking to somebody who loves animals. And if they're not, you'll know pretty quickly. You know, you, like if you mention that and they go, well, why would you do that? And say, well, I believe in keeping myself busy. I wanted to, you know, basically donate some of my time while I was conducting a job search. I happen to be an animal lover, and it just seemed like a great fit for me. Obviously, what I'm looking for is an engineer, you know, I'm looking for an engineering or project management job, but obviously, and maybe at the shelter they had some engineering problems. I don't know. You know, I don't know exactly what you did for them, but I don't think that that's bad at all. You know, you just don't want keywords on the top of your resume to be all about the experience with the nonprofit, you know, the animal welfare. You don't want those keywords to be on top. You want the keywords to be on the top of your resume that have to do with your project management and your engineering background. But I personally, Jerry, if I saw somebody that did that, I would think better of them. And I think most people would feel the same way. This is from Jerry. Are there behavioral type questions that we dare ask the hiring manager during an interview? You can do that, but you've got to be careful. You do not want to put the interviewer on the defensive. But you can ask them, you know, certain things about how the company reacts to things, you know, but remember what you're doing. An interview is not a fact-finding mission for you. An interview is an audition. You're auditioning for a part. I want you to think about actors and actresses that go to screen tests, and they have to read and they have to be seen in the role of the person that they're going to play on screen. Okay, that's really what an interview is. An interview is you auditioning for the part, and then when they're interested and you get a job offer, now you've got to make the decision, yes, it's a fit for me or no, it's not. But in every single interview, you're trying to show them why you're the best person they should hire. And so you've got to be careful if you're asking them behavioral interviewing questions. They don't like to be interviewed. You know, they don't want you to turn the tables on them. So if you ask something about the company culture, that it's okay. But just make sure that if you're going to do that, that you're not putting them on the defensive. Because if you make an interviewer uncomfortable, you're going to get screened out. They have to like you. They have to feel that you're a fit. And you've got plenty of time. You know, you really don't want to do this early in the process. You want to get until you're in front of the people that you're actually going to work for when you're asking those type of questions. Okay, this is anonymous. I've worked as a manager for a couple of companies, and it seems to me that we are often provided questions which do provide us a lot about the prospective employee, but they are often deceptive regarding the real work environment. For example, we may include a question about identifying proactive opportunities, but the company, for whatever reason, is bound to a fire drill environment. Is it okay to ask behavioral type questions as a potential employer? If so, how would I phrase these similar to the type of questions I am asking hiring managers who might hire someone in my profession? Again, I think you have to look at what is the end result that you want. And you have to have, I would write the questions out in advance. And you're right. And the truth of the matter is, some people don't realize, like I've had people describe an environment as proactive when in essence, you're, just like you said, they're constantly putting out fires. They don't have a proactive bone in their body, but they think they do. Like they think their company is very proactive when they're not. You know, it's a constant crises mode. You know, they're not preparing. They're not anticipating problems down the road. So, you know, I do think that you have to think about the end results. What is the information that's most important that you want to receive from individuals? You know, and then ask a series of questions that really do reveal the real environment. Because I think once you ask for examples, can you give me an example of that? Then you're going to know if, in fact, what they've told you is, you know, is a legitimate, you know, a legitimate environment or a legitimate culture. And the truth of the matter is, if you ask most people to basically describe their company culture, they would have a very difficult time because what they think it is so often not at all what it really is. You know, it's not how their employees perceive it at all. So, you know, it's a series of questions and I would write the questions out in advance, you know, and what you have to think about, since you're obviously a very experienced manager, you've asked a lot of these questions, figure out what is the information that's most important, you know, basically for you to find out, and then you're going to formulate the questions based on that. And I love to ask people to give me specific examples. So if I'm going to ask a behavioral interviewing question, I'm going to follow it up with, can you give me some examples? You know, and what was the reaction of others? Because sometimes even when people give you examples, you're thinking, wow, that doesn't sound like the right action. But then when you ask them, well, how did people react to that? And then you realize, wait a minute, the way they handled it was the correct way. So, you know, if you're the person asking the behavioral interviewing questions, ask a follow-up question, you know, to get, you know, the why, you know, what was the reaction of other people to this? And then you're going to even go one step further, you know, and really have an understanding of the situation. Let's see. Okay. I feel that employers, this is another anonymous, I feel employers ask behavioral interviewing questions to screen out older candidates. I'm in my 50s and know I'm being discriminated against at every interview. I can tell when the people interviewing me are young enough to be my child and they look at me like I'm an old lady. Okay, Okay, first of all, in your 50s, you're not old, okay? And you're also in the age protected, you know, anybody that is from the age of 30 and I'm sorry, 40 and above is protected by the age discrimination laws. And I'm wondering if they're discriminating against you or if you just feel old and you're going in interviewing old, because there's a young 50-year-old and there's an old 50-year-old. And if you're worried about your age, chances are you're bringing much too much attention to your age. When people see somebody with extensive experience, they're worried about, are you making too much money? Are you going to be too, you know, expensive? They might worry, are you going to be flexible, you know, for change? Like what if their environment, they look at where you worked and they know that environment is very different than their company. So they need to hear you say things like, I embrace change. I have a very high energy level. I love to learn new things. I'm very computer literate. You know, the only thing they would worry about is, have you kept up with technology? Are you making too much money? And can you adapt to their environment? You know, again, they also worry about that with younger candidates. And if you go in thinking you're going to be discriminated against about age, no matter what they say or do, you're going to convince yourself you're right. You know, if you think they are, you're going to prove yourself right. And so I would really think about, what else did you do in the interview? You know, quit blaming them and point a couple fingers back at yourself and ask yourself what you could have done different in the interview to get the job. I can't believe that if you've been on multiple interviews and you say every interview you've been on is discriminating against you because of age. I find that hard to believe. I find that people want to hire people that are a little more mature, you know, for a lot of reasons. You know, a lot of times the communication skills are much stronger, you know, with people that are in their 40s and 50s than there are in their 20s. You've got a wealth of experience to bring to the table. There's many reasons why, you know, they want to hire. They like to hire people that don't have small children. They worry sometimes, they can't discriminate against it, but they worry, are you going to take too much time off if you've got small kids? You know, so I mean, there's all kinds of reasons, but if you go in expecting to be discriminated against. No matter what the other person does, you're going to convince yourself you were right. So you have to quit thinking that way. You know, and the truth of the matter is, if you walked into a company and the average age was 18, would you really want to work there anyway? You know, like I have grandchildren, and so I go to Chunk E. Cheese every so often. I wouldn't work in that place if you paid me $1 million a week. I mean, that would drive me nuts. Obviously, all the employees in there are extremely young because they're the only ones that could put up with that. You know, so there are certain environments that you wouldn't even be happy in. So you need to look at where your targets are, look at where you're setting your, you know, setting yourself up, and realize that there are many people out there that will hire you if you adapt the right attitude. Let's see, I turned in an application today, and when I gave my application resume, I detected some sour facial expressions from the person who took my resume. I thought that was so rude. Wow, okay, and this is from Anthony. Okay, so again, if you filled out an application today and the person that you gave it to gave you a bad facial expression, you got to go around them, because obviously the person that you handed your application to is not the person that you would work for. You know, it might be a receptionist, it might be an HR assistant. It's not actually, you know, it's probably not the person that you're going to work for. You know, so you turned in an application today. I would find out, I would determine who would be your boss's boss, and I would call that person. And now I would not bring this to their attention. I would not say that I gave my application to one of your people and they gave a sour facial expression, because, you know, this person is working for them, you're not. So you don't want to complain about one of their current employees. But you just want to say, I handed in my application today. I'm very excited about working for your company. I'm confident in my abilities to do the job. And I wanted to let you know that I've turned in the application. So hopefully you'll have a chance to review my credentials, because I'm very confident, you know, in my ability to do your job. And I'm very interested in working for you and your company. And let me tell you why, and give a good, solid reason. So you want to call the person who would be your boss's boss, and don't deal with the person that gave you a sour facial expression. Don't let a screener, an initial screener, stop you from possibly getting a job. And then I have to ask, maybe you imagine that they gave you a sour expression. I don't know, Anthony. It's tough. And is it rude? If that was the case, of course it's rude, but don't let them stop you. Go around them. You know, that's not the person you're going to work for. And by the way, if you did hand your application to somebody who might possibly be your boss and they gave you a sour facial expression, you don't want to work for them. I mean, that's not a good first impression. So if it was somebody higher up, next, you know, you've got to work for companies that are going to respect you. Regarding using references, I have been emailing my three references to let them know I am going on a job interview and what it is, just in case they're called. Is it a good idea to follow up with them after the interview? I've been on two interviews and haven't had much to say to my references afterwards. I think it's good to correspond, Deborah, with your references. The one smart thing you're doing, and I hope you all listen to Deborah's questions, because Deborah is very smart, okay? That what you want to do is, you know, when you use somebody as a reference, you want to make sure they know the type of job you're going after, because maybe you've done something your whole life and now you want to do something different. And you use them as a reference and they don't know you're looking at something different. So when they're called to give a reference, they're talking about what you used to do and how great you were at it. And they're probably hurting your chances. And so let them know, you know, before the interview that you're going to use them as a reference. Let them know the kind of job it is, the name of the person that might be calling them. And then after the interview, what you want to do is you want to call them again and say, okay, I went on the interview, and give them any insight into the person. It seemed like they really were stressing this particular area. So when you're called on, for a reference, if you could stress that, I would greatly appreciate it. You need to prep the people that are giving you your references. And by the way, they really appreciate it. People use me as references all the time, and I always have to call them and say, okay, what kind of job are you going for? You know, give me some input so I know what to say. Because I'm an experienced employment person, most people won't think to do that. They'll just talk about what you used to do. And as they're trying to help you, they're basically helping you get screened out because they didn't know the type of job you went after. So that would be the answer to the question. This is the gentleman who thought somebody smirked at him. Okay, Anthony, I was dressed up and looked and felt very professional. You know what, too, Anthony, again, you know, don't let this person, you know, part of a job search is you're going to deal with a lot of people that aren't necessarily going to be nice to you. It's like dating. You know, you have to, they always say you got to kiss a lot of frogs before you meet your prince. You know, you got to date a lot of people before you find, you know, your soulmate. You got to go on a whole lot of interviews and deal with a whole lot of idiots before you find the person that is worthy of you working for them. Okay. And sometimes you just have to write it off. If in fact you went to a company, somebody made it, you know, gave a bad look, made you feel uncomfortable and you were dressed up and you look professional, do not let them affect you. See, you can't control what other people do ever. You know, and I've said this on a number of my calls, and I want every one of you to really listen to me right now. You cannot control the job market. You cannot control what other people do. You can't control how they look at you. You can't control their smirks. You can't control the questions that they're going to ask you. What you have 100% control over is how you choose to react. And Anthony, I don't want you to overreact to this one person. If you felt professional and you were dressed up appropriately and somebody gave you a dirty look, then you need to go around that person and find out somebody higher up. Again, don't complain about this person because they're an employee of this company, but go around them and see if there's not still a chance for you to, you know, for you to get this job. What you are overqualified for the job means. Oh, if they tell you you're overqualified, usually, Luciana, usually, Luciana, if they tell you you're overqualified for a job, it means one of two things. It either means you have too much experience or they think you're going to cost them too much money. Because what, you know, sometimes they'll say that they're asking for 2 or 3 years of experience. You have 10 years. And so what their biggest fear is, Luciana, is that you're going to take the job and you're going to keep interviewing. And the minute you find a job that has more responsibility, you're going to leave them. And so they're worried about, you know, are you just taking their job as a part-time thing? You know, you're going to do it now until you find a better job. So if they say, I feel you're overqualified, you can say, you know, I'm extremely interested in your opportunity. I feel I've got the skills you're looking for. If I have some additional talents that are not on the job, wouldn't that benefit your company? I'm looking to make a long-term commitment to you. And let me explain why I so want this job and want to work for your company. You know, and now you've got to explain to them, and maybe you were in management and now you're going for a job that's not management. You've got to explain to them that you're tired of babysitting with people. You're tired of listening. You know, you just want to get out there and do the job. I mean, you know, so you have to let them view that, yes, you're very interested. It's not something that you're going to do in the interim. I had one person say once, well, what do you want me to forget? If I'm willing to work for you at this salary and do the job that you've got for me, what are you willing, you know, what would you like me to forget? Because I'm very interested and excited about this opportunity. Okay, I was given a phone interview last week, but the person who I spoke with was not a decision maker. This is from Scott, and did not have hiring authority. He mentioned that he wants to speak to his VP about me, but how can I continue to engage with this opportunity if I don't hear anything after a week or so? You know, and you're right, Scott, because time kills deals if you don't hear anything. But the problem is, if they have somebody screening you, Scott, you're not the only person they're screening. They may decide, you know, to do, you know, a week or two of screening interviews, and then this person's going to put forward the people he's most interested. The fact that he told you, Scott, that he's going to you know, discuss you with the VP, what you should have done is said, you know, well, you know, can you tell me, you know, what time frame should I follow up with you? You know, when do you think you'll be able to do this? And what is the target date to fill this position? You know, I am actively interviewing, but I'm very much interested in this opportunity. Can you give me the target date that you've got to, you know, to hire? And where am I in the interviewing process? Have you just started? Have you pretty much, you know, conducted most of your interviews right now? And when would be an appropriate time for me to follow up? And then you're going to send, you know, this employer, not the person you talk to, you're going to send him a thank you note, really thanking him for his time. Remind him that he said he was going to discuss you with the VP, you know, and then, you know, offer him some additional information, you know, send him a thank you note and then offer him some additional information. Call him and say, you know, I've got some additional information I think would interest both you and your VP. Please call me at your earliest convenience and think of something else that you didn't mention. Provide an additional reference check and get him on the phone showing him what's in it for him. Like, you don't want to call and say, I'm calling to get a status report. I'm calling to follow up. Those calls are never, ever, ever returned. If you want a call return, you've got to show the person why it benefits them to call you, that you've got more information or you've got something that's going to help them. Then they're going to call you back. you know, and so I would definitely do this. Now, if you hear nothing, what could have happened, Scott, is they liked you up until the time that they saw a couple other people that were stronger. And even though he told you he was putting him in front of the VP, you've been screened out later in the process and they just haven't told you. So you have nothing to lose and everything to gain by identifying who the VP is and sending him your resume and saying, I had an opportunity to interview with, and tell him who you interviewed with. I know that he was going to discuss me with you. I want you to know how interested I am, how confident I am in my abilities. And mail it to him and mail it personal and confidential on the left-hand side of the envelope and handwrite the envelope so a secretary doesn't open it. And now this person's going to open it and they're going to love that you were smart enough to get your credentials in front of them. And even if this initial person screened you out, chances are that VP is going to want to see you because you did something that most other people don't do. Okay, this is from Beth. If a recruiter is screening candidates for specific experience, such as a role in a high revenue company, $3 billion plus, can you overcome with experience or skills in a smaller organization? No. If in fact, Beth, that part of the minimum skills of doing this job, you know, if they've been told that a person must have, you know, experience in a high revenue company and they want that high revenue to be $3 billion plus, you know, your experience in a smaller organization is not what they want. They've told this person this. Now, if you were in a $2 billion company, I would say you're close. You know, you steward for a high volume company or even $1 billion. I mean, if you work for a large company, maybe not $3 billion, I would still try. But if you've worked for a company that does, you know, $100 million, that's not what they're looking for. You know, they're looking for somebody that has that very, you know, high revenue company experience. And so the years of experience, Beth, are not going to give you what this company needs. This is one of the screening factors, and there's nothing you can do around that, you know, because they give certain criteria and they're not going to interview people that don't have it. It's just like them saying, you know, a degree. If they say a degree is mandatory, you know, or that sometimes they'll say a degree or experience, then you've got something to negotiate here. But if they say a degree is mandatory and you don't have one, you're wasting your time by applying. I do not know what difference is in behavioral questions. I am a recruiter. In my last position, I worked on my own as the rest of the company was based in Toronto. So when they asked, how do I deal with a difficult situation? How do I answer? Well, even though you were working, you know, you were working on your own, Tanya, you know, because your company was based in Toronto, you still had to deal with difficult situations. Now, you might not have had if they say a difficult situation with a client or a candidate or a coworker, I'm sure you were interacting with everybody in Toronto. You know, you might have been interacting on the phone, but you were still interacting with them. And if you were a recruiter, I know you dealt with crazy situations because you've got people on both sides of your sail, and you could probably come up with a whole lot of difficult situations that you had to deal with. You know, you just didn't have to be there, you know, physically to have, you know, difficult situations. May I wear an earpiece and use you as my anchor for intelligent responses? I love that question, Linda. I've had people ask me if I would go on interviews for them, but I've never asked if, you know, they could wear an earpiece and I'm basically going to give you questions as you're on an interview. You know what? All I'm going to say to you is most of the information in our career portal, Linda, was written by me. And I've been involved in employment for over 25 years. And that's why I do most of these calls. I'm bringing some other experts to you also that I think can help you. If you go in and listen to the past calls, Linda, if you go into the career portal and do the 16-step process under prepare, search, and connect, and interview, you'll sound just like me. And every time a problem comes up on these calls, Linda, there is an area in the career portal called Job Search Solutions. It's in the 16-step process. Anytime any of you pose a question or a problem, I make a program out of it. And so really go in there. I appreciate the compliment, but I'm sure you can do a great job on your own, Linda. But, you know, thank you for your compliment. Regret if this question is a bit off topic. I recently attended a career fair. Anything to do with your job search is not off topic. So anything about a career fair is fine. Okay, I recently attended a career fair and gave my resume to a couple companies that sounded promising. I wanted to follow up, but only a few of the reps gave me business cards with their contact information. Is there a good way next time to get contact information from a rep who doesn't provide it without with light probing? Well, number one, they're supposed to be sharing their contact information. And what I would do, Erica, is I would call the people that put on the career fair, and I would ask for the names of the people that were representing the companies. Also, it's very easy. The internet and social media has made it extremely simple for you to find out who hires in a company. What I would suggest that you do is don't even follow up with the people at the career fair. You know what companies you wanted to work for. Look in the company and figure out what title you're going after, Erica, and then target the person who would be your boss's boss and tell them, I met one of your reps at a career fair. I was unable, to get their contact information, and I decided what I'd love to do is contact you because you obviously are somebody that I would love to report to. Or maybe I'd report to someone under you, but I wanted to make you aware of my interest level and my confidence in doing a job for you and just send it directly to a hiring authority. Next to networking, okay, networking with individuals, having somebody give you a name, open a door, sending your resume, an unsolicited resume in an envelope that's personally addressed, handwritten, with personal and confidential on it to the person who would be your boss's boss. That is the second best way to find a job in today's job market. How to deal with questions like, what is your salary expectation on the first telephone interview? Isn't that ridiculous, Luciana, that they're trying to get your salary expectation? But again, the person that is doing the first interview is a screener. So you try not to give a number. What you try to say is, this is what I earned at my last company, and you quote your last salary. And then you say, obviously, there's some flexibility, and I'm going to look at the whole package. I can tell you, however, that I'm extremely interested in your opportunity, and I feel very confident that I can do the job. So if you're asked this, you want to quote your last salary and say, of course, you're going to look at the whole package. There is some flexibility because you're extremely interested in their job opportunity and working for them in their company. Now, if an online application asks for money, okay, I would again quote what you put down. If they ask for a number and say that you're willing to take a step back. I've talked to some executives that have made, $400,000 or $500,000. They know they're not going to make that kind of money. And so if you think that your salary might, cross you out of consideration, I suggest you put something down like $1,000. Because they're going to wonder, like, did you do that on purpose? Was that a mistake? And at least you're going to get a phone call. And what you want to say is, I didn't want the whole decision to be made on money alone, because there's many other factors that are more important to me than just salary. And most employers respect that. And so, if you have to do an online application, I would do that. A lot of job descriptions require the candidate to have an exorbitant amount of skills. You may have maybe only 3 out of 5. How strongly do interviewers look at your skills versus your potential? In this particular job market, Ben, they're looking at your skills. Very few employers are worried about potential right now, unless it's a lower level job that says willing to train, chance for advancement. It depends on what level of job you're going at. If you're willing to take less money and learn, then by all means, they might consider you. But most employers right now, because it is a competitive job market, they're looking at your skills versus your ability to learn things or your potential down the road. I always tell people, if you come within 60% of the credentials being asked for, unless it's like a degree or something that's mandatory, I would still apply. Because, if they really like you, Ben, if you go on an interview and you ace that interview and they love you, they're going to teach you what you don't know. See, it's not always the most qualified person that gets the job. It's the person who aces the interview. It's the person, quite frankly, that the interviewer liked that gets hired. Let's see. I have applied to this company where I live 30 times since 2009. I have had 2 interviews out of 30. I haven't landed a job yet with this company. I am frustrated. I have vented my frustrations to some higher-ups in this company. Was this wrong? Yes, because now they think you're a stalker. You've ruined your chances, Anthony, of ever working there. If somebody applied at my company 30 times since 2009, I would wonder what in the world is going on. Like, am I the only company you're looking at? And the fact that you haven't landed a job, if you had the credentials they were looking for, Anthony, they would have interviewed you and hired you. But for some reason, you got screened out. And the fact that you vented your frustrations to higher up in the company, that was job suicide. They're never going to hire you. And so you've got to write that company off. and don't ever do that again. You never want to apply that many times at a company because, quite frankly, they're concerned that you're a stalker at this point. You're kind of scaring them. And then you're venting why you're not happy with them. You know, when you're applying for a job, they're in the driver's seat. You're not. They're only going to hire somebody who's going to make them look good. And now you're actually complaining and being negative, even if you're right. Even if there's things you're saying that are correct, they don't want to hear it. You know, they want to hire people that are excited and up and interested. And again, you've just applied way too many times. And the fact that you complain to people, write that company off and look for other targets. And I don't mean to be so harsh in my answer, but you need to stop applying there. I get the generic thank you for applying to our company. We've decided to move on to other candidates that better fits our needs. Have I been flagged as a problem person? Possibly. You know, because again, Anthony, you applied too many times, you know, and they track every single time you apply at a job, they track you. And so, you know, you've basically ruined your chances of working there. Let's see. Thank you. This call was in response to my direct mail with no specific position advertised, but I listened to what you said. Good, good. And again, I hope, you know, what I'm telling you on these calls, it's not going to work 100% of the time. Nothing works 100% of the time. But everything I'm giving you does work in today's job market. And so what I would challenge all of you to do is do something different this week, okay? Just do something you've never done before. Get out of your comfort zone. Go out there and do something that's going to actually put a knot in your stomach because you're so uncomfortable. But that's when you're learning, and that's when you're going to have a chance at getting a job. I've had close to 13 interviews without receiving one offer. Is this normal? This is from Susan. I've never had a problem with interviewing before. Is it taking a lot more interviews with different companies to obtain an offer? Yes, it is, Susan. You're in a job market that we've never seen before. Now, the job market is getting much better than it was. But I have to ask you things like, I don't know your background, Susan. If you've been out of work for a long time, a lot of employers will only hire somebody if they're currently working. And that's unfair, and it's, you know, it's unjust, and there's a whole lot of really qualified people that are not working that should be hired. But that could be a reason why you're being screened out. If you've been to 13 interviews and not been hired, I hope you're not sharing that during the interview. If they ask, where have you been interviewing, you know, I have had a couple interviews. I'm close to a couple offers, but I'm most interested in your opportunity, because everybody wants who everybody else wants. And if you share with an interviewer that you've had 12 or 13 interviews and no offers, they're not going to give you an offer, because now they're going to worry that something's wrong. You just have to keep going out there. I have to commend you, Susan, because you're doing something right, because you're getting interviews. What I would suggest is go into our career portal and click on interview. And we talk about second, third, and final interviews. We talk about things you can do in an interview. It could be that your follow-up isn't strong enough. It could be that the questions you're asking are not appropriate. It could be a lot of things since you've had, you know, 13 interviews and no offers. So what I would do if I was you is I would log into the career portal again, and I would click on the interview section, and I would read and listen to every single piece of information in our career portal on interviewing, and it'll help you. One company has asked me to come for an interview 3 times, and I went every time, and they have not called back. Why do they bother? Because they were interested in you, Tanya. A company would not call you back 3 times. But the problem is, in today's job market, Tanya, they probably called you and 2 or 3 other people back 3 times. You know, and what happens is, in the last interviews, the last person who's interviewing is the person you're going to work for, and that person's going to hire who clicks with them. So, and you're saying you don't enjoy the runaround. Nobody does. And honest to God, they're not trying to give you a runaround. They're trying to hire the best person. And most interviewing processes are 3 or 4 interviews. And I know that that's gut-wrenching, and I know it's not fun. But if you didn't get that job, how you handle the rejection could determine if they're going to consider you for another job. If you came back for 3 interviews, that means you did really, really, really good. And so what you want to do, Tanya, rather than feeling like you got the runaround and being angry with them, remember, you can't control what they do, remember, but you can control how you react. What I would do is I would call them and say, I love your company. I was so disappointed when I didn't get the job I applied for. Is there anything else that you have currently available that you think I would qualify for? I would love to be considered for future openings. And then every 30, 60, 90 days, get back in touch with them. And says, wondering if any other jobs have opened up, because you made it to a 3rd interview. So they really did like you. They weren't wasting your time. Just at the last minute, they chose somebody else. But it's how you follow up with them and your attitude that will determine. And also, they may know other companies that are hiring. So ask them, you know, is there anything in your company? If they say no, do you know any other companies that would hire somebody with my credential, anybody in your network that you'd be willing to, you know, pick up the phone and tell them about me? I felt very good because I had three interviews with you, which, you know, lets me to believe that I've done pretty good. Is there anybody else that you know? Because I'm really serious about getting a new job. And, you know, they feel bad that they didn't hire you after three interviews or, you know, possibly give you names. So again, all of you, you can't control what other people do. You can't control what other people say. That's the biggest mistake job seekers make, is you get angry and you get ticked off and you're all angry over things you have no control over. The only person you can control is you. You can't even control what your family is saying to you. Don't you love when your spouse comes home and goes, well, what did you do in your job search today? And in essence, they're worried about you, but it sure doesn't come across that way, does it? But how you react is what counts. You know, you're in sales right now. There's going to be rejection. There's going to be disappointment. It's how you handle these things that determine how soon you're going to find a job. And every one of you, what I want you all to do when I hang up, after we hang up today, I want you all to think about the happiest day in your life at work. When did you feel the best? It was the happiest day you've ever had at the office or in your manufacturing company, wherever you worked. And I want you to remember how you felt on that day and how confident you were and how good you felt about yourself. That's the person that has to make the phone calls. That's the person that has to go on the interviews. That's the person that has to react to all the craziness that's going to happen to you when you're in a job search. How do you answer the salary question without leaving too much money on the table? I recently was asked and later found out the number I gave was at the low end of their salary range. Again, do what I said earlier, you know, put a flat number and tell them you're looking for any kind of, you know, you're looking for the whole package. This is Anthony. Thank you for your assistance. You're the best. And Anthony, I've been a little tough on you in this phone call. I hope I'm glad that you feel that the information is good. There's a job out there for you. You just have to go out there and find the right company that deserves to have you as their employee. I applied for a lab technician job, and I thought it would be a great idea to ask for an informational interview or some way for the recruiter to notice my resume among the many candidates that they had applied. They denied the informational interview. What should I do for them to notice me? I would greatly appreciate your help. To have them notice you, you want, again, Samantha, go to the person who would be your boss's boss. And by the way, you know, recruiters don't give informational interviews. They just don't. And so when you're submitting a resume, and these are the people that are screening all the resumes, who will give you an informational interview is the person that's doing the job that you want. So when you're going to get an informational interview, you're targeting people who are either doing the job you want or they're supervising the job that you want. And you're going to ask them how they got there. So you don't want to get an informational interview with a recruiter. They're never going to do it. That's why the recruiter told you no. Because they're not in the job you want. You know, you want to do informational interviews with people who have the job that you want. Okay. That's how you get noticed. And again, send your resume bulk mail in an envelope that's handwritten with personal and confidential on it, you know, and get it to the person who would be your boss's boss. I'm a new grad in the engineering field. How important is the knowledge of specific softwares if it's listed in the job application? If I didn't learn that specific software, can I self-teach myself if included on my job application, or might they get mad if it wasn't taught to me? It depends on if they're asking you if you have knowledge or if you have experience, Danielle. If they're just asking for knowledge, they're not going to get mad at you if you teach it to yourself. They don't care how you get the knowledge. And there's a lot of courses. And by the way, we're looking at schools because a lot of you have asked for, you know, courses on different computer, you know, software. You're looking for certifications. You know, we hope to have that in our career portal by the end of the year, which I know is not going to help most of you because I hope all of you get a job soon. But, you know, we are going to look for some of the, you know, we're trying to find places that can really offer us this kind of training reasonable. But there's courses online. And as long as you learn it, if they're asking you, do you know it? You know, so if they're asking you if you have knowledge of it, whether you taught yourself or learned it in school, Danielle, you can use it. But if they're looking for experience, just knowledge is not experience. You haven't used it. I think I get screened up by mentioning my current salary, my expectations with the new company. Maybe it's on the higher side. I mostly do online applications where I would have to give one exact number. What would you suggest? Number one, I would suggest you quit doing all your applying online. I don't want you, Rena, to do more than 15% of your time on the computer. You know, if you're mostly doing online applications, especially if they're on websites or job boards, you're applying where there's the highest competition and where you have the least chance of getting a job. I want you to really focus on networking. I want you to focus on directly marketing yourself to people who would be your boss's boss and watch your job search turn around. And so again, especially if your salary expectations you think are high, you've got to go to that person who would be your boss's boss, and you're not going to mention salary when you're directly marketing yourself to somebody. You know, and if you think your salary is too high, you know, then you have to think about this, Rena. If you're not currently working, are you willing to take a little bit of a step back? Are you going to look at the whole package, the benefits and everything as well as the salary level? But my biggest suggestion is get out from behind that computer and start networking and directly marketing yourself. I think, though, being a recruiter is tough. It is tough to be a recruiter, Tanya. You know, it's one of the most rewarding professions out there. And let me tell you why. Because recruiters change people's lives for the better every day of their life. Their biggest frustration is that they can't help everybody. I think every recruiter I've ever met, they want to help everybody. And the worst part of their job is telling you they can't help you, or telling you that's why we created this career portal, you know, so that the people that we want to help everybody find a job. You know, but a career, the reason recruiting is tough is because you got people on both sides of the sale, and both people keep changing their minds. Now we're at 3 o'clock, and I know some of you only allow an hour for this call. I'm going to keep going because I have some more questions. If you want to hang up now, you know, because you allowed an hour, I understand that. This call is recorded, but I'm going to keep going and answer all the questions. Is cold calling, door to door, knocking on doors, and handing out cards, resumes out of the question? It pretty much is, Linda, because when you're going door to door, guess who you're going to meet? You're going to meet the receptionist, and they're probably going to throw your card away, and they're not going to give it to anybody. And so it's very hard. You know, I would much rather have you, you know, send some information bulk mail and then tell them you're going to call them. And then when you call in, you say, you know, by the way, they're expecting my call. I sent some information. Is sending a follow-up thank you card still okay? Absolutely, positively, yes, if your grammar and punctuation and everything is perfect. I give informational interviews after a first screening. Now, I do have a recruiter here who will give an informational interview after a first screening, which I normally don't hear of. So I think that that's wonderful that somebody's willing to do that, because most recruiters will not give informational interviews. This is from Samantha. Thank you so much. I will definitely start my resume mailing. Yeah, and absolutely to your, and by the way, if any of you have not gotten your resume review, we have a team of experts that will look at your resume and tell you exactly what's getting you screened out. Sometimes it's not you, sometimes it's your resume. So if you have not gone and had our experts do a resume review, the cost is $7. I mean, we're charging you what we actually pay them to review your resume, and you'll get anywhere from 10 to 13 pages telling you exactly what to do to have your resume screened in and not screened out. So if any of you have not gotten your resume review, please log into our career portal and sign up for that resume review, because it can make all the difference in the world. Let's see. A great website in Ohio for various training is www.ohiohereTohelp.gov. So Linda is giving a resource for people in Ohio. It's www.ohiohereTohelp.gov. Linda, I would love if you would send that to me at support@careersupportnetwork.com, because any resources we're getting, we're trying to put in our library. So if you could send that to me, this disappears when I'm off the call, Linda. So if you could send again that site to support@careersupportnetwork. By the way, all of you, if you want me to cover any topic for you, I use these, the titles of these programs are all given to me by job seekers. And so anything you want me to train you on, send your suggestions to support@careersupportnetwork.com. If you have, you know, if you have a success story of what's working for you, please tell us, because we love to know what works. This is Susan. I was a senior manager in my last position. Is it okay to take senior out of my title when applying for manager positions? Yes, because the word senior automatically makes me think that you're going to earn too much money, Susan. You mentioned directly marketing yourself to companies. How exactly should we do this? This is from Carla. Carla, there actually is a program in the career portal that I did on only this topic. And it's called, you know, directly market yourself to hiring authorities. What you do is you send your resume in an envelope that's handwritten, and you identify the person who would be your boss's boss. And in your cover letter, you say, I will be contacting you within a week, you know, to hopefully set up a conversation. And it is just, it's the easiest way. You put personal and confidential. It takes some research and sourcing on your time. You've got to, you know, check websites. You've got to, you know, check the internet. You've got to Google people's names. You've got to go to LinkedIn and try to, you know, link with people that might know the right person. It takes some work, but it's going to get you results. I think too many people sit on their computer all day long answering website ads and job boards because it's easy, but it's the toughest way to find a job. You're up against the highest level of competition. I have a question. I had my own business 6 years ago, and then recently I put up a website again, but I'm afraid to start from scratch again. This is from Tanya. That is why I'm searching for a job. Is it easier to work for someone else? It depends on you, Tanya. If you've got entrepreneurial blood running through your veins, chances are you can't work for somebody else. But if you're done, you know, owning your own business can be gut-wrenching. You know, it just can be. And so if you'd rather work for someone else, you know, that's a decision only you can make. You know, I can tell you that, you know, I have a lot of people that wanted to get into our profession. You know, they look at the staffing and recruiting profession, and it's pretty easy to get into this profession to help people find jobs. But again, you have to want, you know, you have to want to own your own business. So what I would say to you, Tanya, is if you've got, if you've got entrepreneurial blood running through your veins, chances are, you know, that you're going to end up owning your own business, you know, just because you